Social Recordables. Jimmy Carter, the United States' 39th president. South Korea has ordered an emergency safety inspection of the country. Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
And from the border of liberty and prosperity on the highway to north, this is Safety Wars for Monday, December 30th. Oh, my shirt's not even buttoned up. Look at that. I'm getting too relaxed. Monday, December 30th, 2024. We have our big countdown to 2025. Hope you're doing great out there. I hope everything is, I hope Santa brought you everything you needed. And I hope everybody's having a great Hanukkah and Kwanzaa season. As I'll, we'll continue with the safety music, the Christmas safe-oriented safety music, because that's what we do here. And it's also the, how should I put it? It's also the, still 12 days of Christmas, right? Yes, that's not only a song. Christmas is 12 days. So hopefully we'll have all of this, we have holiday decorations, so we'll have that all down sometime next week. We'll see. Or maybe we won't, you know? Where have I been? I have had stuff going on every night this week trying to close things out for 2024, as well as family events every day. So that's where I've been. I hope you are enjoying the same thing too. Let's do this. Our lead-in. How's this sound? Hold on.
Yeah. Oh. Protect your hands, your eyes, your grin. Oceans here, let's all begin. Fireworks, they light the skies, but safety glows within our eyes. Goggles, gloves, a wise disguise. Keep those limbs low, no goodbyes. So drop the ball, not the guard. Our rules may seem so hard, but they're here to keep us smart. Safe and sound in every part. Ladders stand on solid ground. Harness tight, be safe, be proud. In the crowd and in the shop, safety tips never stop. Shine so bright, New Year's Eve and every night. Celebrate with all your might, but choose safety, never fright. Drop the ball, not the guard. Our rules may seem so hard, but they're here to keep us smart. Safe and sound in every part.
And that was Safety Warrior there with rolling into 2025. We also have some other, I tell you what, I got a lot of comments on this one.
the bells ring out so clear. Safety clause is coming near. With a bag of hard hats bright, he brings peace to every sight. Checks the harness, checks the gear, spreads the cheer without the fear. Guide the workers through the night, makes their task a pure delight. Safety clause, safety clause, brings us peace without a pause. Safety boots and signs so dear, keeps us safe throughout the year.
Yes, having fun with AI Christmas music. Yes, we do own all of this stuff. So we are inserting them. We have some stuff planned, so we're going to have some clips inserted throughout the whole new year based on our news stories and other things. So somber note, 1 year ago today, I was working with my brother on our mother's house, right? And I got a phone call from my friend Jay, not Jay Allen, another friend, Jay. And he says, hey, Jimmy, what's going on my side of the town? I'm not hearing anything. There's supposedly a huge, huge shooting or something. I don't know. I know nothing about it. Short time later, we received word that the Morgan family was horrifically killed in a murder-suicide. And the other side of town. So that was for, that was, you know, it was a horrific situation there. We were friends with the Morgan family through our activities our children shared. So there were four members. I will not mention the name of the father who committed the crime. The 40, Ornella, was the mother, and two sons. We had Liam and Gabe, ages 10 and 12. I was the one of the coaches for Liam for Little League, and both of their sons were involved in the Boy Scouts, and as we are here, so that's how we knew them. It was a tragedy. Now, I'm going to start out by saying this. If you are having issues, mental health issues, if someone you know is having mental health issues and is not addressing them, and I know we have this whole thing, especially now, and when there's a tragedy, we're not even going to go into the subway stuff going on here, New York City subway, where someone got burned to death over the recently, and no, everybody sat there with this. Hey, look at this. Hey, you know, that's right. And even the police didn't realize there was a burning body there, apparently, according to some reports. And people don't get involved. And this is one of the things people don't get involved in is mental health. As you know, we've had some stories here on that recently and some commentary. If someone you know is having mental health issues and they are not getting help, and you realize it, and you know you're in there, ask a question, be a friend, be empathetic. Hey, are you having issues? What have you? If they're having mental health issues and you cannot help them, maybe you could seek out resources in your community. Hey, I have a friend who's going through a rough time. I have a family member going through a rough time. I think that they may hurt themselves or others. We do have red flag laws. In this case, the father was a police officer. I am not aware of any type of investigation saying that, other than people wiping their hands of the situation and saying, well, it wasn't work-related. Oh, okay. A person goes and kills his entire family. He was having issues at work, but it's not work-related. Well, how were you able to come to that conclusion? Well, we have HIPAA laws. we can't go with that. It's medical privacy. Oh, okay. So we basically have to take your word for it with all these health and safety programs that we have in our society that this is the answer. I think we have 1.2 million people dead because of pandemic. And what weren't some of the things in the congressional report mentioned stuff like that? Well, you got to trust us. We have, you know. Okay, great. With this, I understand what the laws are. I know I'm going to get emailed. Well, Jim, the law is blah 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 blah. Okay, great. But this is one of the shortcomings of the law and living in a free society and with a right to privacy is that we don't release medical records. But the whole thing is, this is what you'll have to expect, where people don't want to get involved. People don't want to have the information isn't out there and everything else with this. And now we have this situation. How has it impacted the community? I tell you what, we were at the Camp Novi Vasco over the summer. That is where, also known as Camp Crystal Lake, where they filmed the Friday the 13th movies. That's where it's a Boy Scout camp. My son and I were there for camping, and with the Troop 97 out of New City. And what do you think happened? At the end of the week, they have a sing-along. They have acts. They have things right before everybody is ready to leave, and they did a song for them, dedicated one of the songs. What do you think? Starlight, Starbright, first saw Dar I See Tonight. That was Gabe was very fond of that song. We had grown men crying there over this. You had scouts crying and upset. I was upset. It hit me. Earlier in the spring, we were singing that song at our first camp out without Gabe or Liam. Liam wasn't really in the scouts, but Gabe was, right? He was, I believe, the second year. I might be wrong on that. And what do you think happened at the end of it? As soon as we were done singing the song, a shooting star went above. Documented on the NASA website. And it had nothing to do with anything else. It wasn't part of a larger meteor shower. It was just one of those things. Incredible. We had tributes throughout the year. They were involved in 9/11 in a 9/11 charity. Their neighbors and friends continued that work with the 9/11 charity. A horrible, horrible situation. So I'm going to tell you this. If you are having the feelings, ideating, right, meaning concentrating, obsessing on hurting people or other people, please get help. There's no shame in that. Not, right? Get help. Very difficult to detect this often with this. So that's all I'm going to say on that. And I'm going to go to commercial break and we'll start with our regular commentary.
My wish list ain't the same. Listen close to what I claim. Cookies, milk under the tree. Carolers singing merrily. But my heart's got one request. Keep me safe, it's my quest. All I want for Christmas time is some PPE that fits just fine.
Hey employers, want to avoid hefty OSHA fines? Listen up, OSHA or the Occupational Safety and Health Administration can issue penalties after inspecting your workplace. If they find violations, you'll get notified by certified mail or in person. You have 15 working days to contest it or the penalty becomes final. How are penalties determined? It depends on your business size, the severity of the violation, your history, and your good faith efforts. Even if you fix the issue right away, you might still get fined. Let's talk numbers. A willful violation can cost between $11,524 and $161,323. Repeated violations hit up to $161,323. Serious violations can reach $16,131. And other than serious violations can also cost up to $16,131. If you fail to correct a violation, it's $16,131 per day. Lastly, missing a posting requirement? That's another $16,131. Stay informed, stay compliant, and keep your workplace safe to avoid these costly penalties.
I'm sure you've heard the news.
Have you listened or watched the Safety War show? It does stream live on the radio and on the streamer emers that we have. So if you have not taken a listen to Jim Bozell and what the hell he's doing every evening with Safety Wars, I would strongly encourage you to take a view or take a listen, whichever option is available for you, and take a listen to what the hell he has going on. It will take some deep dives and some information that you might be interested in.
OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Pozel with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy.
So we got some bad news yesterday on Jimmy Carter, former U.S. resident and Nobel Peace Prize recipient, dead at 100. He had, as for someone, I was very young in the 1970s. When he was elected president, I was 6 years old. And again, I've been listening to this stuff of my parents and everything with the news and everything. WOR out of New York, 710. That was my parents' station. Listening to this on the Iran hostage crisis and everything else. And I'll say this much. He was, right when he ran for re-election, he lost like 49 states. In the Electoral College, nobody really cared for him as president. However, he did have Egypt and Israel real peace. He, tried to manage things the best he could with this. And if you're, there's whole books written on this, some favorable, not so favorable. I think his most important job that he had, which he reportedly excelled in, had two of them, but one that I will, the most important, Sunday school teacher. Up until recently, 5 years ago, he died at 100, up to like 5 years ago, I still taught Sunday school. I'm not just saying that because you have a lot of people out here who are very religious and everything else. I truly mean it. I was a Sunday school teacher for many, many years. Confirmation class teacher also. Nothing is more important than Sunday school. A lot of times, and you're going to say, well, a lot of those people don't come back to school, blah, blah, blah. And a lot of times that's the only morality that children have. If you're not religious, only morality or a version of morality that they may have was through that. Number two, you're saving souls. More importantly, you're helping to save souls. So a friend of the program, Father Pete, he did not make an alumni gathering recently, and he had Father Pete business. I said, Pete, I think saving souls is a little bit more important than going to an alumni gathering. And he said, well, I wish everybody thought that way. I don't think I'm saying anything that he wouldn't mind, you know. Not saying anything against anybody at the alumni gathering. Nobody said anything. But they were upset he wasn't there, but, you know, that's about it. Now, missing him, because we all get together once a year for this gathering for high school, but nothing is more important than that Sunday school with him. He also, as are noted, as a he got involved in the Habitat for Humanity, helping people. So not only did you have a man of faith right out there teaching Sunday school, you also had him putting it to work with Habitat for Humanity, building things. And I'm going to say this, rest in peace. I think he's, history will be much more kind once the generation who was alive, when he was president teeters out, with that. I don't think anybody really, they didn't like him as president, but they really liked him and I respect him as a human being. With that, so rest in peace, President Carter, and I'll see you on the other side, maybe hopefully in about 30 or 40 years. So with that, on to more, talking about, this is not the depression show. U.S. Treasury says Chinese hackers stole documents in a major incident. From what I understand, this has been going on since the mid-1980s with these computer hacks and things of that nature. So according to Reuters, this is a story by Raphael Satter and A.J. Vissens, Chinese state-sponsored hackers breached U.S. Treasury Department's computer security guardrails this month and stole documents in what Treasury called a major incident, according to a letter to lawmakers that Treasury officials provided to Reuters on Monday. The hackers compromised third-party cybersecurity service provider Beyond Trust and were able to access unclassified documents. Been going on for a long time, and apparently again, being secretive as to what we're doing with it, about it. I don't know what to tell you. Well, sooner or later, the Guvenos are going to hit the fan here with this stuff, and we're really going to have a problem. Unclassified documents. They're calling it a major incident. This is from Gazette.com, calling it a major incident. According to the letter, hackers gained access from the press release to a key used by the vendor to secure a cloud-based service used to remotely provide technical support for Treasury Department offices and users. With access to the stolen key, the threat actor was able to override the security and access certain Treasury Department user workstations, access certain unclassified documents maintained by those workers. I don't know. I can see in the future this being considered an act of war, something like this. With this, we had a fiery plane crash that killed 179 in the worst airline disaster in South Korea. Have you seen that video? Haunting. For whatever reason, the landing gear did not deploy and it went on its belly. And there was a lot of questions there. There were two flight attendants that survived. They were in the back jump seats on the airplane. Probably if I had to guess, the way those jump seats are set up, they're behind a wall. They're attached to the wall and are facing the tail section. I'm wondering if that gave them a little bit more shielding that they were able to survive the crash on that. So hopefully we'll get to the bottom of that. They're saying bird strike, according to the video. Something happened with the engine. I don't know. And a couple of minutes before, there was a bird strike warning. Yeah, what's next for Texas? Four major questions looming on the divided. That's politics. We're going to deal with politics in the second half of our program here. Right? Norovirus is from The Hill. .com. article by Nathaniel Weichsel. Norovirus outbreak surging across the U.S. according to CDC. Norovirus cases are surging across the country this winter. There were 91 outbreaks reported by state health departments during the week of December 5th, up from 69 in the last weekend of November, according to the Centers for Disease Control. The highest number for the same period over the last several years was 65 outbreaks, but the data are not comprehensive. Currently, state, local, and territorial health departments are not required to report individual cases of norovirus illness to the CDC. I tell you what, most people that I know who get this norovirus don't even, unless it's something serious, they don't even go, I mean, like, you're, like, dehydrated or you're a child, infant. Most people don't even report this. I know we had, and when my son was in daycare, I believe it was before 2016, it must have been 2014, I didn't have my daughter yet. We had norovirus in Rockland and Bergen County, Rockland County, New York, and Bergen County, New Jersey. And we had, it went through, it was like 6 weeks. Somebody got either norovirus or rotavirus. It was just a horrible winter for like 6 weeks. We got this. So what are the thing, right? A person gets infected by getting tiny particles of guano or vomit in their mouth from a person infected with norovirus. The virus spreads through contaminated water, food, and surfaces. It only takes a few norovirus particles to make people sick. Wash their hands with soap and water, hand sanitizer. Now, et cetera, right? We should know that from COVID. Now, let me point out with this. If you are on a ship and there is a norovirus outbreak, that's usually where it occurs. And that's why they always have that, you know, wash your hands on the ship. Wash your hands on the cruise ship. If they do have that, you'll never know about it. So, friends of mine, Dave and Christine, their mother and father were on a cruise ship that had a norovirus outbreak, and it was all over the news. They finally got in contact with their parents, and they said, well, how are you managing the norovirus outbreak? They said, what norovirus outbreak? The one on your ship. Well, nobody told us. Wow. You know? But basically, it's a tough thing having to do that. Now, I think we covered this story when it occurred. This is from Greenville, South Carolina, published December 27th last week. Greenville County Sheriff's Office and the Greenville County Coroner's Office said an investigation is underway. Now, this is another story we're talking about here. After a tragic accident at Frankie's Fun Park on December 27th, according to the sheriff's office, an incident occurred involving a forklift and a go-kart at the park. The coroner confirmed a 17-year-old Kamal Sevian, I think that's how you say it, Sewell of Simpsonville was killed in the collision. Sewell was an employee at the park. The coroner said the cause of death was a blunt force injury to the head. The manner of his death has been ruled accidental. Sewell was operating a go-kart when he collided with a industrial forklift. And now there's an investigation, I am sure. Let's see. Was he an employee? Yes, he was an employee there with that. He was in 11th grade. Rest in peace. That's a horrible thing to happen around the holidays for family. But often, right, the high risk, right, you talk about high risk physicians out there. One of them is the teens, right? That's one of them, are the teens out there. And you're going to say, well, what do you mean, Jim? High-risk physician. Often companies do not Hold on here. Often companies do not. Now I understand why we're having audio issues here. Sound better now? Often companies do not train their safety, temporary employees, which is usually what a teen is. A temporary employee. You know that teen is, you're going to hire the teen. Teen is going to go out and is going to do their thing. Go to high school, go to college. And what's going to happen? They're not going to work there. Maybe they're working there on the summer. So what happens is companies typically do not go out there and do right by their teenagers. They don't train them. Now, I'm going to say this much. If you have a teen going into the workforce, college graduates soon to be going into the workforce, maybe it might be a good thing to have them invest in an OSHA course. Again, I'm not going to advertise for other LMS systems. We have one here that we use. But send them to an outreach course. Often vocational technical schools will offer them. Have them take it. With that, the reason being is, and again, I teach in a major university that takes this very, very serious here with this. Now, train your employees, train your children, train everybody else. The reason being is that stuff like this happens. I'm not saying this is what happened here where they didn't train anybody or the lack of awareness, but that's often what happens in these situations with us. Again, I don't know. We have to wait for the investigation here, but that's what I see. Oh, well, he's 17 and he's only going to be here a couple months. We're not going to train, right? Hopefully, the investigators asked that question. Here we have out a condition today, and this was a local story here. A dual OSHA probe launched after falling tool bag seriously injures work tower tech whose condition is still unknown. The condition of a tower technician who was struck on the head by a falling bag of tools on December 20th in the township of North Brunswick, New Jersey, remains unclear, according to the owner of his employer. The incident occurred, I know exactly where this is, on Lindsay Drive, adjacent to Renaissance Park. Local authorities and OSHA have determined that a toolbag, either raised or being lowered, fell from over 150 feet, striking the technician on the ground. The severity of the impact rendered him unconscious. I think it was probably empty on that. Right? It remains uncertain whether the technician was wearing a hard hat at the time. Both OSHA and North Brunswick Police have declined to provide additional details about the ongoing investigation. And it goes on and on. This is from Wireless Estimator here. And here is... Now, we have third party. The reason I picked this out, not only is it a local story, I know where it is. OSHA will review. I'm not going to mention the name of the company, but it's a company that it's a third party auditing company. We'll leave it at that point. So what happens is you submit your plans to a third party auditor, all right, an auditor program, and you're required to subscribe to that program. Very common in the energy field. So you're required to submit to that, right, that auditor. Then that auditor gives you a grade, A, B, C, or D, or failing, right, with that. So here we have OSHA will review compliance, but will this other company. OSHA's ongoing investigation will likely focus on whether proper procedures for securing tools during hoisting operations were followed, and if the companies involved adhere to federal safety standards, because it's New Jersey, right? Federal program. This scrutiny could significantly affect safety practices and accountability throughout the subcontracting chain. While OSHA's findings are crucial, another question looms. You didn't hear that from me. Will this other company review its role in the compliance ecosystem? Again, nobody Again, under investigation, everybody's innocent until proven guilty. No one's responsible. There's litigation and everything else here. Although the company, the host employer doesn't require contractors to be this third party compliant, another company on site does. And if the contractors are installing on the structure, right, they would have to be compliant. Industry insiders have long noted that some subcontractors slip through this third-party monitoring service rigorous supply chain oversight. This has raised concerns among professionals who meet the company's stringent safety and risk management criteria, an expensive process that often excludes non-compliant companies and independent contractors who avoid these requirements altogether. Again, remember, independent contractors do not have to comply with OSHA. In addition to potential lapses in the pre-qualification process, questions remain about contractor compliance with the other people paying for this, their workforce standards. And in 2022, this company began requiring that at least 50% of all crew members working on its projects hold certifications from the National Wireless Safety Alliance. Whether the company met these requirements at the time of the incident is currently unknown. Again, third-party monitoring, it's an issue. I mean, basically, let's go into the Wayback Machine here. Back in 1992, you would go and you'd have your safety plan, and you would go and you would submit it to a prime contractor or host employee, employer. That contract would be reviewed for everything, right? Would be reviewed. And then they'd send it back and say, yay or nay, or we have some questions with that. Now, what ended up happening sometime in the mid-1990s, a lot of these companies sprung up. This one company that I accidentally mentioned the name of was one of them. All right. I have to edit that out here. Was one of them. All right. Now, what this did was what the lawyers, what they've always said is you don't want to be approving or disproving or accepting a plan, right, and issuing comments on it. Because now you are liable and you're saying that plan is good and compliant. So what they've done is said, look, you need to be in this system. And there are two big ones out there. They have to review your plan and your program, and it's very detailed. We actually help companies all the time get through this. So you can give us a call at 845-269-5772. And there you go. I've been managing these programs for many, many years. And what ends up happening is, these plans, they give you A, B, C, D, and then you say, oh, well, you're subscribed to that, you must be good. The problem here is this. Often these companies, it's called checklist safety. If your plan has those checklist items in there, guess what? You're approved. The other thing is this. You are not actually certifying that that is an OSHA-compliant plan. A little bit mind-blowing, isn't it? No, you say this is the third-party monitoring service. They're compliant. We're compliant with their standards. Ooh, really? Yes, that's what it is. You're not actually saying that that is an OSHA-compliant plan. You're not even saying that that's what the hell you do. This is the problem. I'm not teaching people how to get around things. This is the problem with these plans here. Where you submit them to companies, nobody actually, you're not really saying, there's nothing in there saying you're going to follow that plan. There's nothing in there that says that's OSHA compliant either. And even if you go to people who write these plans for a living, they're going to tell you, not necessarily OSHA compliant. Usually is, but not necessarily. So especially, let's say, OSHA issues a standard in the middle of your compliance period. isn't it? So, for example, OSHA is coming out with a new PPE standard in January where if you're a construction employer, you have to buy equipment that actually fits your employees. Right, they've had it for respirators, but not for anything else. So are you actually doing that? That's basically what it comes down, you know, in there. And this is where we have issues here. And again, this I'm going to say wirelessestimator.com. I'll give them a little plug here. It's actually, I've got to bookmark this one because I tell you what. How do I do that here? Yeah. Keep changing things there. Oh, here it is. Okay. I'll bookmark that one with that. I tell you what, it's never heard of that website. So here we go. And we might be on tomorrow. I'm running through the Department of Treasury news releases here. Here we have one from December 26th. Let's do a share screen on here. Videos and screen. So we have Department of Labor finds a Glenvern contractor ignored repeated warnings and site-specific safety plan in fatal trench collapse at a Brownville worksite. A federal workplace safety investigation has found a Glenvern general contractor's decisions to ignore an on-site expert's repeated warnings and the company's own safety policy led to a fatal injury incident in June 2024. An employee suffered fatal crushing injuries when an unbraced retaining wall collapsed. Now, without, I'm going to go into the full-blown report as usual here, but this is what we have here going on here. On-site expert's repeated warning. That's probably the competent person. Warnings, right? The competent person is the one. Let's review. Unless you're over 20 feet, a competent person has to okay and inspect and everything, that whole situation with the excavations. Well, if that competent person tells you don't, so to be a competent person, you have to be able to assess and correct. Apparently, this person was not legally the competent person because he was ignored. Have I gotten into this situation before? Absolutely. Absolutely. I was on a job site many years ago. I'm not going to mention it's a very well-known contractor, very well-known person. I said, this is wrong, that's wrong, blah, blah, blah. They said, well, you can't stop the work. We're going to continue the work. We're not fixing Guvno for you. He didn't say Guvno. He said another word. Okay, called up my boss, found a phone, called up my boss, no cell phones in those days. And I said, well, what do you want me to do? He's ignoring everything. He said, make sure it's in the logbook, in the paperwork. I'll call his boss. He got his boss on the phone, and he said, yeah, so what? Okay, well then, just hang out. I was hired to be the confident person. I'm not the confident person. Again, get that in writing. If you are in a state that actually prosecutes people, it's critical. I had a training class last Friday. That's why I wasn't on the air. And the guy says to me, I'm doing a job in New York. Do you have any special things? I said, yeah, where are you working? He said, told me. I said, well, you're not in the city, so you don't have to worry about DOB, Department of Buildings. You're outside of New York City. I said, but you're in a state where you're the competent person. If you F up, guess what happens? Your ass. So don't make sure you follow everything. Make sure you enforce the rules. You're doing very high-risk activity here. They were giving training on that high-risk activity. The U.S. Department of Labor's OSHA determined two workers, getting back to the story, employed by a paving group, were installing storm drain pipes in a 3 to 4 foot deep trench. At the same time, the company owner used an excavator near the retaining wall's base, which destabilized and caused a 40 to 60 foot long section of the wall to tip over. One worker escaped, while the other worker suffered fatal injuries. OSHA investigators determined the company owner knew the wall next to the trench was unstable at 4 feet. I don't know if this is a trench. Well, we'll figure it out what they said, but did not use necessary protective systems to evacuate employees. The continuing excavation created clear and imminent dangers. So what were the citations here? Again, everyone's innocent till proven guilty. There's litigation and everything else involved, and an investigation here. Citation 1, item 1, type of violation, willful series. The employer did not instruct each, this is 1926.21, the employer did not instruct each employee the recognition and avoidance of unsafe conditions and the regulations applicable to his work environment to control or eliminate any hazard or any other exposure. The employer did not train or instruct the employees in the hazards associated with trench activities, regulations applicable to the work environment, and the wall bracing contingency plan. $32,000 proposed plus. Citation 1, item 2. The employer did not, and this is the same thing, two employees injured, two things, right? $32,265. Citation 1, item 3. Third employee apparently was hurt here, $32,265. Citation 1, item 4. This is from the Trenching and Excavation Standard. 1926.651, little I, big L. Where the stability of adjoining buildings, walls, or other structures when it's endangered by excavation operations, support systems such as shoring, bracing, or underpinning were not provided to ensure the stability of... Pardon me, didn't hit the button quick enough here. Worksite, on or about June 25th, 2024, one of the three excavation workers was struck and killed when an unsupported, unraised retaining wall collapsed into a trench. So apparently this did not reach. Again, they were not trained, but here we go. Citation 1, item 5. Here we go. I should have stopped, not commented. Right, where the confident person found evidence of a situation that could result in possible cave-in indications of failure of protective systems, hazardous atmospheres, or other hazardous conditions, exposed employees were not removed from the hazardous areas until necessary precautions have been taken to ensure their safety. The confident person did not remove employees from the excavation after observing evidence of a situation that led to a retaining wall collapsing and killing a worker. $32,265 for a grand total of $161,325. So if you are the confident person, it is critical that you get it in writing that you are the confident person. If you're not the confident person, make sure you get it in writing designating who the confident person is. And number one, all right? Number two. If you get pushback, no, we are not the confident person, blah, 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 blah. You cannot stop work, blah, blah, blah. You have a decision you have to make. What do you do? First of all, I'd probably throw in a text message saying that you're not allowed to make decisions. You're not going to have no authority on site. And then an email. Something like that. Get it in writing somewhere that you're giving recommendations and they're ignoring you. Very, very, very important for this. Now, here you go. I'm in the excavation standard here. And that is 29 CFR 1926-650. Right, 650 here. An excavation means any man-made cut, cavity, trench, or depression in an earth surface formed by earth removal. Right, and this subpart applies to all open excavations made in the Earth's surface. Excavations are defined to include trenches. So an excavation, first thing you do, okay, an excavation, how do they define it? You go to 1926 650V. Excavation means any man-made cut. Trench. What is a trench? Means a narrow excavation in relation to its length made from the surface of the ground. In general, the depth is greater than the width, but the width of a trench is not greater than 15 feet, right? If forms or other structures are installed or constructed in excavation so as to reduce the dimension measured from the forms in the structure to the site of excavation to 15 feet or less, the excavation is considered to be a trench. All right? Excavation requirements. All surface encumbrances that are located so as to create a hazard employee shall be removed or supported. 29 CFR 1926-651. All your requirements right here is very, very detailed here with that. So here we have requirements for protective systems. Each employee in an excavation shall be protected from cave-ins by an adequate protective system designed in accordance with the subpart, right? Excavations are less than five, there's two exceptions. When excavations are less than 5 foot deep in depth, an examination by the ground by a competent person provides no indication of a potential cave-in. So we're going to share this one here. All right, so let's share this one because this is where people screw this up, right, with this. You can say, what do you mean people screw this up? I'm going to highlight it right here. People read this way. Each employee in an excavation shall be protected from cave-ins by an adequate protective system designed in accordance with paragraph B or C. Okay, great. We're at 1926.652A1, right? Except when excavations are made entirely of stable rock, all right, or excavations are less than 5 foot in depth. That's how it's read, right? They leave off the second half of this, and the examination of the ground by a competent person provides no indication of a potential cave-in. Right? So that means that a competent person has to make the determination if it's less than 5 feet, if there is there a potential cave-in. Right? That's gonna be dangerous to the employee, obviously. So when does this... So what do you mean? Let's say then, and people get cute. The engineers get cute. The architects get cute on this, as my father would say. They say, well, at five, they read the first half, that 5 feet or less in depth. So we're going to get around all the OSHA regulations, and we're going to just make all these excavations 4 foot, 5 inches, or four foot, 11 inches. Right? Give them some little wiggle room, 4.5 feet. Then we don't have to worry about anything. And what happens? People go and they sit on their hands and knees and they're on their bellies. Guess what? You're on a belly, 4 foot trench collapses or excavation collapses on you. There's a cave in. You're dead. You're going to get, or you're getting hurt. Because what happens then? We got to dig them out. And what? How do they dig you out? Shovels, picks, and a backhoe. And what happens? They break you in half or decapitate you. And then you're dead. It gets flooded out, and you drown. Something happens. So this is where the problem lies here with this, is people are not reading the regulation in its entirety here. Getting back to the story here. Hold on here. We'll go back to the other software, God willing, tomorrow. So the wordings are very clear, yet the employer chose, and it was a choice, according to OSHA, to ignore them, putting progress before safety and putting employees directly in harm's way. And this was up in Maine. There is no excuse for callously endangering workers' lives. And OSHA is currently implementing a national emphasis program and entrenching an excavation, focusing on enforcement and education to identify and reduce hazards that pose a risk of serious injuries or fatalities in these operations. Patriot Paving Group. Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to say the second time I've done that. Don't like to do this. Here is another trenching excavation situation. U.S. Department of Labor investigation finds a Frisco contractor, again, exposing workers potentially deadly trench collapse. Everyone's innocent until proven guilty here. This is out of Fort Worth, Texas. A U.S. Department of Labor safety investigation has found a Frisco contractor repeatedly exposed workers through serious hazards. The Department's OSHA investigated the certain company in July 2024 in response to a formal complaint and observed employees working on a water sewer line in a trench that lacked adequate system protective systems. In addition to lack of a protective system, OSHA's inspectors noted that the company provided failed to provide employees with basic safety measures such as ladders in the trench and a safe means of escape in the event of a collapse. This is a repeat problem here, apparently. In 2022, OSHA cited the company for four serious violations of similar regulations after a 41-year-old employee suffered fatal injuries. With this, I think we covered this story here. OSHA has assessed the company with $107,000 in proposed penalties. With this, so let's see what these are. And they do not list their citations here. What are they? Apparently, this is what we have. S, the three S's, slope, shore, and shield. And and what else do we have here? We'll be on the air tomorrow, hopefully. We'll go through the rest of these stories here. They're very disheartening, some of this stuff here. We covered one here. Yeah, let's do this. U.S. Department of Labor finds a Louisiana contractor could have prevented a 27-year-old worker's drowning at a North Carolina work site. A heavy equipment operator and a foreman with a certain company were repositioning a pump and using an amphibious excavator. That's one with very wide tracks. While attempting to exit the water-filled cell, the machine tipped over, trapping the equipment operator underwater. The crew and emergency responders could not revive the person. So here we have OSHA assessed the employer with $50,000 in penalties. Proposed here. Let's scoot on down here. I'm just interested. This is 29 CFR 1926.21. No training for the employer. 16,131. Citation 1, item 2. This is 29 CFR 1926-106. Again, if workers, employees working over or near water where the danger of drowning exists were not provided with approved life jackets. With that, they were not provided with or required to use personal flotation devices by the employer, 11,524. No ring buoys. 90-foot of line, another 11,524. How much is that ring buoy? A life-saving skiff was not immediately available. 29 CFR 106, 1154, 524. We're going to bookmark this one, too. I don't know. That's all we have. Let's do our outro. Hour two coming up on Rumble and on the podcast network.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.
Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
Snowflakes fall like ashes down from the sky. All we want for Christmas is to not say goodbye. Twisting lights on, tinsel twisting the truth, while Santa's sleigh and fallout just vanish from view.
Yeah, so that is Atomic Christmas by Safety Warrior. I'm your host, Jim Polzel. This is hour two of Safety Wars. What are we talking about here with this? So I made a decision last week that we are not going to be doing politics on our first hour, which is live streamed on the Safety FM network. We are going to be doing the politics on hour two here. With this, people want to hear. I was involved in politics for many, many, many years with this, mostly local campaigns, but a lot of national campaigns. And someone would say, well, I have, controversial views. Well, they're not controversial if you agree with me, right? With that. And then I said, well, everybody else goes out there and they talk about all this controversial stuff. I'm going to do it. Because this is what happened with the current election that we have out there, with the past election, I should say, in November. A lot of people were lied to on political issues. A lot of people were given hyperbole. False information in a lot of cases, got their hopes up. And they listened to the alphabet soup of networks out there, what they used to call mainstream media, with that. And they were in the media was allowing their biases in. And what ended up happening? People, well, it didn't turn out exactly like they've been told for the last 3 years on President Trump. What ended up happening? Now there you have disillusionment. Just now, people who left politics, left social media, right, because of the political situation, are now, a couple of my friends are now coming back into it. And as I always say, if you are advocating for violence or anything like that, you're blocked automatically. That's not something I put up with. Now, That's just the way it is. With that, what are we here? We're on this program. We are, I'm going to be unabashedly pro-human, pro-American on this. I'm not going to lie to you here. That's where my point of view is. With that, just the way it is, we're looking at things from an America-centric point of view with this. However, that does not mean that we don't consider other points of view. A lot of times, now starting, I think it was 2012, 2013, United States was not allowed to propagandize its own citizens. That's why the VOA news really wasn't heard about. Voice of America News in this country wasn't for broadcast in this country. Starting then, they started broadcasting it for in this country, number one. Number two is this. The government has what is called sovereign immunity. That means that they could say whatever they want to you, and then there's nothing you could do about it with that. So what ends up happening is a lot of the information we get, even from the mainstream news, I think now they're doing the right thing, may or may not be necessarily correct. So what do we do here on Safety Wars? Is that we're trying to get back into what the in-depth stuff. We try to go behind the scenes. We try to dig a little bit deeper with this stuff here. And we're about voter education. It's the purpose here, voter education. Now, at a certain point, I'll be honest with you, I'm not the best writer. Never was. Now, I'm much better now than I was 20 years ago. Right now, pretty good writer. 20 years ago, not so much. And when I was in graduate school, my master's project was specifically on environmental reporting on the news. And then I mentioned the importance of getting good, accurate information because we are requiring people to vote on issues. And if they do not get good, accurate information, what are they voting for? Right? That was one of the things my point was. Little did I realize I was 15 years ahead of everything. I was all right on the money then, but now all of a sudden everyone's talking about accuracy. And now with platforms like Rumble, YouTube, Facebook, Odyssey, we're on all of those, Twitch, and all the other stuff. Now we're able to, people like me, people, citizen journalists are able to share things with us. So here we have, Iran says 2025, important year for nuclear issue. That's why we had the segue in of Atomic Christmas by Safety Warrior. Iran bracing for a possible reimposition of incoming U.S. President Donald Trump's maximum pressure policy said on Saturday, this past Saturday, that 2025 would be an important year for its nuclear issue. Trump in 2018 reneged on a deal struck by his predecessor, Barack Obama, in 2015, in which Iran agreed to curb uranium enrichment, which could yield material for nuclear weapons. Now, we had the argument then in 2018 was that they were not complying with this treaty, and the treaty was a bad deal. So we pulled out of it. Let's remember, it was not ratified by Congress, which means that it was more or less an executive agreement here. So had it been ratified by Congress, then President Trump would have been forced to live up to it. But since it wasn't ratified, what teeth does it have? Not much is the answer. With that, it's an executive agreement, and guess what? You have a new executive in, you're going to have a different executive agreement coming up. Private nuclear bunker sales are on the rise, but experts issue a stark warning. This is from sfgate.com. Mention this. A private nuclear fallout shelter has been perking the ultra-wealthy. That's a whole bunch of people with them. Now, this is what the problem is. Again, every once in a while here in New Jersey and New York, we get one. Someone buys a house, and all of a sudden, oh, wow, we have a nuclear bunker underneath the house. With that, okay, if you go into Crescent Carney's work, Nuclear War Survival Skills, which is still one of the official manuals in the U.S. issued by the U.S. government. It's available on the internet in PDF format. How to build these things, a makeshift one. That you would probably be good for a couple of days with that. Basically, it's a $175 million a year business is what they're estimating with that. And now this is what the problem is, right? Is this actually necessary? Right. So provided the person doesn't die in an initial blast, experts have pointed out that there is a decent chance of survival. However, that survival may not be pretty. Right. With that, again, the government's not going to be able to it has plans in place for 3 10-kiloton nuclear blasts on the same day in the United States. Anything more than that, that's extremely difficult to manage for the government. So you're basically on your own. Right. With that, the thing is, the preparation, we talk about preparation in every September on this program. You can go and look it up. Right. So again, this is a pretty relevant thing. Bunkers are, in fact, not a tool to survive a nuclear war, but a tool to allow a population to psychologically endure the possibility of a nuclear war, said Alicia Sanders-Zakira at the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons. It's like this. What are you going to do? You don't know what situation you're going to have. You don't know what situation you're going to be in. What is safety? Let's go into that. Safety is not zero. We know that. Safety is capacity and resilience. And with disaster planning, I talk about safety being resilience, capacity, and here, building a fallout shelter, you're increasing capacity, and your ability to learn new skills. Can you learn new skills? Are you open to new skills? Right. I always add that one in when we're talking about disaster versus industrial safety. So, again, other countries have civil defense mandates. They have fallout shelters. Israel being one. And the thing is, are you going to live comfortably in there? Or how are you going to outfit it? Most people are not going to have the resources to build a bunker, right? So FEMA says in this article that each occupant of a bunker must have at least 10 square feet and 6.5 feet of headroom. Those with the means will also want to bring their above-ground luxuries below ground. They should also consult with their municipality to determine what permits might be needed. Well, here's the other story. I always say, don't let anyone know what your survival preparation is. Are you actually going to, right, when you get these permits and everything else, from local municipality to think, now you're letting everyone know you have a survival shelter. I don't know. I don't know. That sort of like defeats the purpose with this. I think the smartest thing is to avoid nuclear war. And I don't think our current leaders are really interested in it. I don't know if it's hype or what have you here, but we're closer to nuclear war today than we have been since probably the Cuban Missile Crisis. Again, in my book, which I don't have out here, right, Nuclear Terrorism, if you're at ground zero, chances are you're not going to survive that. But it's when you're further out that you're going to survive things. So what do? You locate your family and you away from targets. What kind of targets are we looking at? Power plants. Military bases. Pharmaceuticals. Reservoirs. These are all common targets, and other, we can, list goes on and on and on and on. So, again, and with fallout, right, the decays have, right, what they're estimating is you're going to be in the shelter probably for a week until things, until radiation levels fall down to low levels. How you get, you know, again, preparation and everything else with that. But again, it's like the old Simpson episode, the old Twilight episode. You have a bunker, everybody wants to get into it when there's a problem. Right here. So Russia has announced the decision to scrap its moratorium on deploying intermediate and short-range nuclear-capable missiles. This, as Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, this is from MSN.com, explained, is due to the United States deploying similar weapons in several regions across the globe. Moscow, therefore, thinks it's apt that it, too, withdraws from the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty. The INF Treaty was signed by both the U.S. and Russia by then in 1987 by then-President Ronald Reagan and Mikhail Gorbachev. The treaty required that both the U.S. and Russia eliminate all nuclear and conventional ground-launched ballistic and cruise missiles with a range of up of 310 miles to 3106 miles. That's 500 kilometers to 5,000 kilometers. As a result of this, U.S. and Soviet Union had destroyed 2,692 short, medium, intermediate range missiles by the treaty deadline of June 1st, 1991. The U.S. had withdrawn from the INF treaty officially in August 2019. This happened after multiple allegations of Moscow's non-compliance were levied. On the other hand, China has also begun increasing its intermediate range missile arsenal, and this too led to growing concerns in the U.S. Russia had recently changed its nuclear doctrine. Tactical nuclear wars, nuclear missiles are those weapons that are designed for use in military situations on the battlefield with a lesser area impact as compared to strategic weapons that can define, that can destroy and wipe out entire areas, cities, that sort of thing. With Moscow troops already possessing tactical nukes in a frightening situation for Ukraine and its allies, including NATO countries. With Russia formally announcing its decision to scrap its moratorium on the deployment of intermediate and short-range nuclear-capable weapons, the environment will grow tenser. So, with these past three stories I have, my question is this. What are you going to do about it? How are you going to protect your friends, your family, and everybody else there? As friend of the program has said repeatedly, and with this, try one thing a year. Practice on one thing a year. This year we're going to try to get this taken care of with our family. This year, because I tell you what, it's an issue. I have an article here from The Hill, article by Saul Elbian from today. Texas is facing tumultuous 2025 as simmering feuds within the state's ruling coalition are poised to boil over during its upcoming legislative session. The power struggle within the Texas GOP, that's Republicans, comes alongside a wave of new challenges for the state, from water crisis to the condition of the electrical grid, which has been, right, if we recall, it collapsed a couple of years ago in the middle of winter. So they're involved in a power struggle, right, with this. Next election cycle is incumbent Senator Ted Cruz and challenger Representative Colin Allred, right? This past year. But again, I tell you what, the GOP has got to take a page from the Democrats. Democrats tend to stick together. They have their arguments, they have this and that. However, they tend to stick together. Republicans, not so much. It's an issue. Here we have an article. This is from the New York Post today. CBS News journalist slams media, says most underreported 2024 story was Biden's obvious cognitive decline. Now, this was mentioned 20 years ago by another former CBS News reporter on the bias at CBS. They said, oh, there's no bias, there's no this, there's no that, blah, 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 blah. Right? And here we go all over again. Right? With this, again, the Crawford, the network's chief legal correspondent, insists that stronger reporting on the topic could have changed the entire election as she responded to a question from Face the Nation moderator Major Garrett about the most underreported story of 2024. Well, they were the ones doing it. Why did they do that? Right? Now we all understand now. What it's really, no, wasn't that a line from Star Trek? Only now do you understand, right? Here, with this, Emperor saying, right? You're depending on this, these people. Anyway, I'll say, only now do they understand, right? What the price of covering stuff up, right? So they weren't accurately reporting on the President Biden, I'm not picking on President Biden, on his situation. They did not dig deep enough, and they ended up costing them an election, in my opinion, one man's opinion. Are they going to, how do they proceed forward? Because right now they have a complete loss of credibility here with so many people, with everything. Okay. Here, where are all my other stories? I have all these other stories. I'm going to go to a commercial break and get a good laugh out of this one.
This is going to blow your mind. There's a new daytime talk show on your local cable access station. What happens when safety, scandal, and heartbreak collide? Welcome to Safety Wars, the talk show. Today's episode is a doozy. Imagine confronting your unsafe supervisor who just happens to be your ex-wife's new hubby. Talk about a powder keg. But wait, there's more. We've got an exclusive interview with a corporate exec who's taken out life insurance policies on his riskiest workers, hoping to cash in on a deadly mishap. Yup, you heard that right. It's a real-life plot twist you can't make up. Tune in as Jim Posel, CSP, our very own Jerry Springer of Safety, dives deep into this explosive confrontation. Sparks will fly and secrets will be exposed. Catch the full episode on Safety Wars on YouTube and your favorite podcast platform. Don't miss out on the drama that could save your life. Like and share now and stay safe, folks.
In a world where danger lurks in every corner, one man stands as a beacon of hope. Jim Posel, a veteran safety expert with over 3 decades of experience, now bringing his knowledge to you with Safety Wars. Engaging, informative, and always relevant. That's Safety Wars. Join the safety revolution with Safety Wars, available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts and videos.
All right, so here we are. We have an article here by Patrick Ruffini released today. America now has more Republicans than Democrats. Something very unusual by historic standards happened in this year's election. There were lots more Republicans than Democrats in the electorate. After the exit polls were reweighted to reflect the final popular vote, Republicans outnumbered Democrats by 5 points in the AP vote cast survey and by 4 points in the network exit polls. Historically, this is unheard of. Democrats have held a longstanding advantage in party identification that dates back to the New Deal, with Republicans drawing even on only a couple of locations until Ronald Reagan remade the party, remade the Republican Party in 1980s. Democrats held a massive advantage in party ID that often reached 2-1 in the 60s. I'd like to know what's going on here in New York and New Jersey with this, because I tell you what, Northern New Jersey. Right, you have the corridor, so this is how it's broken down. You have the turnpike basically divides the state, New Jersey Turnpike. All around the turnpike, that's where the population centers are, and those are Democrat. Outside of that, that's all Republican. Is that changing? There's been some indicators that it has been changing out there. I'd like to know by how much. With that, again, What's going on? People aren't showing up, number one. Number two is that Republicans got smart. They started doing voter registration drives in a lot of areas here. Maybe they'll continue to get smart with this, and then we're going to have a problem. This is from the AP today. A caucus of military veterans seeks to bridge the political divide in a polarized Congress. Players in this year's Army-Navy football game, blah, blah, blah. This is from the AP, Gary Fields. Future can bring moments for the right. So basically, there is a group in the U.S. House that calls itself the Four Country Caucus. Its members are veterans of wide military experience who have banded together across party and ideological lines. Right, we're trying to lead by example, according to Jason Crow, Colorado Democrat, with both within Congress to show our colleagues that this is possible. Also, America boldly. Okay, so this is a good thing. Everybody getting along, right? This group was formed back in 2019, right, and has worked to get 100 bills passed with that. Okay, good. Here we have something a little bit more controversial. Arizona's Tiny Taipei, how a Taiwanese chip factory seated a community here. So, what's going on here? Taiwanese businesses are popping up near taqueria's and nail salons. Taiwanese cooks have joined factories, faring meals, and blah, blah, blah. The spaceship-like factory is making trips, is drawing thousands of workers and families in the area, including as a crucial part of President Biden's effort to bolster advanced chip production in the United States. We have a chip plant right here on the other side of the river here in New York. The company known as TSMC has committed $65 billion to the project, set to receive $6.6 billion in grants through the CHIPS and Science Act. So I guess increasing our chip capacity, I guess this was evident during COVID that this was necessary with this. I do have more information, but I'm not allowed to share it. Here is somebody with a lot of information in my family has with that. Sworn to secrecy. He will not tell me. So what's going on with this? Did you hear about this trench collapse in New Jersey? I'm sorry, not trench. Road collapse. Sinkhole. Right? I knew New Jersey had a lot of abandoned mines in North Jersey. But this past week here, we had a 40x40 sinkhole collapse on the shoulder of Route 80 eastbound here. And this was from an abandoned mine shaft. Now, what's, somebody decided to pull a Jim Poulsel on here and actually do some research. They got an aerial photograph of this thing. It was near Wharton, New Jersey, I think exit 33, if memory serves me right. There's close to 300 abandoned mines in New Jersey. Somebody did a little bit of homework in an aerial photograph, and apparently this mine where the sinkhole happened, this abandoned mine, they built an apartment building on top of the mine. Oops. Now, New Jersey is loaded with limestone, which deteriorates over time. And this is what happens. So here we go. Route 80 in Wharton reopens Monday morning after 4 days of emergency sinkhole repairs. With this, the sinkhole is 40 foot by 40 foot wide, developed off the shoulder, closing all lanes. The sinkhole was found to have been caused by a collapse of an abandoned mine shaft, leading for delays of motors. I mean, they have this stuff all over New Jersey here. There are stories on social media of people back in the day, right, and before all this stuff was built, back in the 50s and 60s, playing in these abandoned mines. So it's not like they didn't know nobody knew that they were there and are there. I mean, a lot of mines in New Jersey. Here, just real quick, how many abandoned mines are there in New Jersey? $450 underground mines in New Jersey, all of which are now abandoned. Wow, more than what I thought. Now, what's the source on there? It's the New Jersey DEP on here. So, map archive of New Jersey's abandoned mines. No, I'm going to do this here. I'm going to share this because this is, I find this fascinating, to be honest with you. Well, what do you mean, Jim? I find it fascinating because there are a lot of these mines. I did not add myself to the stream. There are a lot of these mines. People don't realize what they're looking at. I know in our 1950s textbooks from in Woodridge Township, New Jersey, here. Mining industry of New Jersey, this is from New DEP, right? The mining industry of New Jersey dates back to the 1600s when copper was mined by Dutch settlers around the Delaware River in Warren County. This is Peter's Mine in Ringwood Borough. That picture right here. Pretty interesting. There are no maps from Essex County in this collection, blah, blah, blah. Let's see here. Bergen County. The Schuyler Arlington Copper Mine. This is right down the street here. Abandoned mine right here. Arlington Cemetery. I know exactly where this is. Wow. What else we got here? Oh, you couldn't see that there on the let's see here. Morris, let's try Sussex County. Warren, they don't have Sussex County here? Really? Oh, here it is. Sparta Township. Here we go. Andover, Sulphur Mine. I'm just saying places right by him. I'm familiar with all this place. Sterling Hill Mines. That Sterling Hill Mines, that was in operation up until 1986. I went on a tour there recently. Very interesting here. Come on. Let's share that one. I just find this, being a cartography, being a an old hobby of mine, I just find this very interesting here with this. They have maps of all this stuff. Now, there is another abandoned mine in Stokes Forest here. I don't think it's listed here in Sussex County, but there is a mine over there, an abandoned silver mine that my father and I, my father showed me when I was very small. Here, let me see this. Okay, hold on. So if you go onto some websites, you can go into Stokes Forest, and there is a, and they call it the Silver Mine Trail here. And let's see. Yes. With that, anyway, I digress, right? I get off into these tangents. But what's the point? They built a lot of New Jersey is famous for building a lot of stuff where it shouldn't, right? Look at the Jersey Shore with the hurricanes. Now they're building my stuff on top of mines. Yeah, real smart guys. So I'll be back tomorrow with this here, and take care, everybody.